Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 17th. Sounds like I'm drinking already. I might be. You don't know. You wouldn't know. The 17th day of January 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for tuning in. Downloading, sharing, telling a friend, doing all that stuff. For those of you throwing a few shekels my way on the patreon.com/Derek Hunter podcast, thank you. Double thank you. Triple thank you. Let's see, what else? Do we have any housekeeping? I don't think we have any housekeeping. Say thanks to all you guys who wrote in the questions for Brandon Strock. I always thought it was Straka. I was wrong. You'll find out. But I asked a few of them, and then I thought that most of the rest of them were covered in the conversation that we have. It is the Friday interview edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast. That means we sit down and pick somebody's brain that is interesting and available. They have to be interesting, and they have to be available. And Brandon Strock was both of them. It was a fascinating story. I planned on the thing being like a half an hour long, like most of the interviews. And we went 40, 55 minutes. So we only stopped because we had to stop. I really enjoyed the conversation. I didn't know the guy. I never met the guy before 5 minutes before we started taping. And he has a great sense of humor. He has a great attitude, and he's doing a great service. So that's a triple great, man. That qualifies as an awesome, I think. So you're going to want to listen to the whole thing. Plus, the audio quality is pretty good on this one. We got a new setup, I think, at the Daily Caller. So I hope, I was going to say I suspect, but I hope that in the studio, the interviews will sound a lot better. They didn't sound bad. They didn't sound as good as this one. They didn't sound as good as my home recordings, which shouldn't be the case. I'm just a dude holding a microphone and standing in front of a girl asking her to love him or something like that. But, yeah, so you're going to enjoy that conversation. But first, I got to tip our hat to our lovely sponsors. Look, I'm about to take my drops, my CBD oil. My eye strain at the end of the day is kicking in. And CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com makes a world of difference. It's going to help me sleep better tonight. All the little aches and pains just kind of melt away in the eye strain and the low-grade headache after reading a computer screen for far too many hours of the day. Just goes away, but don't take my word for it. It's amazing what CBD oil can do. If you get good CBD oil, you buy the junk at the grocery store or the gas station or the 7-Eleven, you're on your own, and good luck to you on that. But Ancient Life Oil only uses the finest hemp plants and is 100% organic. There's no pot. This isn't marijuana. This isn't going to get you high. Don't worry about that. It's just going to help you out. It's going to relax you. It's going to help with those little aches and pains around your body that come as you age and the strain and stress. Don't take my word for it. Do a quick search. See what the CBD oil benefits are. See what other people are saying. Read the reviews. Read the testimonials. Read what people are saying. Talk to your friends and family. And then go to ancientlifeoil.com. Pick out your flavor. See what you want to give it a try with. Or try the topical cream if you're uncomfortable putting the drops in. And you will notice right away an immediate difference. You'll be a believer. I am. My dad is. It's shocking, to be perfectly honest with you, how good this stuff is. AncientLifeOil.com. At checkout, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, and boom, you get all kinds of special deals. You cannot beat that. If you're going to try it, try the best. Start right at the top. Nobody ever goes, let me try one of those fair to middling level CBD oils or anything. No, I want your 15th best steak. Nobody does that. They want the best. They want the prime. And the USDA prime, in my opinion, of CBD oils is ancientlifeoil.com. I use the chocolate mint. That's my flavor of choice, but that might not be your cup of meat. There's plenty to choose from. Make your own decision, and then you'll be a believer. Trust me on that. Okay. Thanks to everybody. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, if you want to complain that the whole show was an interview, but I found this interview fascinating. There is a listener warning. Foul language ahead. We both use off-color comments. Not throughout. It's only a few times. But if that sort of thing offends you, you've been warned. You're still going to be offended because that sort of thing offends you. But at least you're ready. You're on your guard. It is, it's not really done in a crude way, although I know that you already read the emails. You can't not do it in a crude way. It was, I guess it was crude. I don't know. It was in the flow of the conversation and the spirit of the moment. So there you go. You've been warned. If that bothers you, just wait until Monday's show. But you should listen to the whole thing because it's a fascinating story of how a liberal became a conservative activist. And the realization, the awakening, if you will, a gay liberal guy becomes a conservative activist. It's not a story you hear every day, but because of him and the walkaway movement that he started, it's a story you're going to hear a lot more of and a lot more testimonials of people going, I can't be a part of this anymore. It's a fascinating, fascinating group, important group, and a great interview with Brandon Strock. The A at the end is silent, so it's not Straka, even though it's spelled like Straka, although he would answer to it, which I think is just an injustice. Anyway, enough of me setting it up. Here is, have a great weekend. Enjoy the interview with Walkaway's Brandon Strock. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 17th day of January 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, clicking, sharing, telling a friend, doing all those good things. If this is the audio version, you've already been listening to the show and you know what's going on. If you're clicking on the video, welcome to the weekly interview segment that we do this year. Technically. This week, we've decided to drag in, good Lord, I shouldn't have had all that cough medicine. They decided to drag in somebody who's making a big difference out there in the world. Usually it's somebody who wants to sell you something. This guy wants to open your mind, change your mind, talk to you, have a conversation. God forbid you have a conversation with anybody. It's Brandon Strock. It's spelled Straka, but it's pronounced Strock.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you came to national prominence simply by posting a video of yourself talking about why you left the Democratic Party.
Yes.
Why were you a Democrat in the first place?
Because I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's it?
That's it, yeah.
A little bit of dick, and it's like, boom, I'm gay. I got to be a Democrat.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, if you were to listen to the other, like, 90% of, I think, LGBT people who are voting Democrat, yes. Right. And it's not just us. It's the black community.
Well, one of my oldest friends is gay, and he is... He ran for office years ago, right out of high school, as a Republican, sort of as a ticket balancer. But now he's living in California, and all of his Facebook stuff is liberal this, liberal that. And then he messages me about, can you believe what these people are doing? He's closeted again, but politically.
Yes. Right. No, and that's exactly what happens. I feel now like I'm almost sort of like reliving sort of that atmosphere of the 80s and the 90s, which was more like homophobic, but now it's just, you know, Trumpophobic. It's republophobic, but it's I mean, honestly, that's kind of it. I think that at a time when there was more homophobia in the world, I think the Democrats were really smart about kind of coming on board and saying, like, look, we're the party that you
tolerance will accept. Yeah, you
exactly
embrace you, and yep, then we will control you. That's always it's a drug dealer model. The first, right, one's free, and then once we get our claws into you, you're ours, and don't you dare try to wiggle away.
I think they're also very good at exploiting the reasons in which the opposition wants to say, what's the word I want to use, preserve maybe the way that things are. I mean, for instance, I really thought that Republicans largely opposed a lot of like gay equality legislation because they hated gay people, mm-hmm, and because they were blatantly homophobic. Whereas now I have a much better understanding, whether I agree or not, that a lot of it is sort of based, I think, in faith-based principles for a lot of people. And I don't think that that was as clear to it, it's the marketing. It's all about the marketing and the messaging. And I think the liberal media and the Democrats are really, really good at controlling that.
So as you were sort of I'm a Democrat because I'm a Democrat without really giving it a whole lot of thought beyond the other team hates me. Why the propaganda that they do? Was there an epiphany? Was there a moment, or was it a gradual realization that, oh my God, these, I think I've been lied to. And then you start investigating. How did you transform? How did you come out as a Republican?
Well, it was kind of both of those things concurrently. It was a little bit of like an epiphany moment, which I'll tell you in a second. But it was in tandem with that, there was sort of this undercurrent of me feeling like liberalism and the liberal camp that I, you know, had been a part of for so long was changing, and changing in a way that I was becoming increasingly uncomfortable with, but I didn't understand what it meant or why. Like, I was beginning as a liberal to...
Were you an activist liberal?
I was an activist on gay rights issues. Okay. I wasn't really out there fighting for anything beyond, you know, like marriage equality or just anything to do with, you know, housing discrimination, things like that. And it was all, you know, about LGBT stuff. Mm-hmm. But no, I was beginning to see how, you know, within the liberal camp now, we were talking about things like privilege and victimhood, and particularly white privilege, male privilege, all of these things that, and the conversation surrounding it just felt so uncomfortable, because I was just like, what does this have to do with anything? And do I even agree with a lot of it? I kind of just went along with a lot of it because at that time I wasn't questioning much. It was like as things started to become a little more fringe and a little more like extreme leftist, it's kind of like the frog in the boiling water thing. I was like, it feels a little uncomfortable, but maybe it's just me. I'll just go along with it. But it did really start to reach a point. I think there was, are you familiar with the Evergreen College?
Yes.
That situation. A lot of people aren't, so way to go. I was not, but a friend of mine who was a conservative, he kept telling, like around the 2016 election, he started talking to me a lot about how liberals are obsessed with things like campus rape culture and, you know, privilege and all of these things. And I was like, no, they're not. No, that's not a thing. That's not a thing. And then he showed me the segment that came out. It was like a 5 or 6 minute expose that was done on what happened at Evergreen College. And I watched it, and something really struck me that day when I saw
this is about the professor who said, I'm not going to vacate the campus so that we can have a black person safe space. If you want to have a conversation, let's have a conversation.
Right.
To segregate ourselves. This is a liberal guy saying, this is absurd. This is obscene. This isn't what you should be doing. It should be coming together and having a dialogue instead of self-segregation. And all hell broke loose. And he ended up, and his wife, also employee of the college, both lost their jobs.
Right. Because what had happened is that for many years on this campus, they had, you know, it's very, very liberal college. And they had had these different, like, black people opt out day, or maybe LGBT people opt out day. But what they did differently this one year is say that it was going to be mandatory. White people can't come to school day. And that basically, if you are a white person and you do come to school that day, you're basically admitting that you're a racist and, you know, all these different things. And so you're going to be the victim of, you know, the backlash that you're going to receive because you're outing yourself as a racist. And this professor who, like you said, was liberal, was like, this is ridiculous. You know, if you want to opt out, that's one thing. But you're saying mandatory, you know, this race of people can't come to school. This is ridiculous. And so all of these liberal students turned on the liberal professor for not being woke enough to go along with this mandatory, you know, white people out day. And there's all this footage of them screaming at him, swearing at him, encircling him, kind of threatening him. And I was like, it really struck me. And I started to understand when I saw that, I was like, wow, something is incredibly toxic about liberalism. Something has gone very awry here. And it's not at all reminiscent of why I became a liberal. I'm not connecting the dots anymore to why I was a liberal and what's happening now within liberalism. So there was that part of it where I was feeling kind of continuously shoved away, but it was after 2016, I voted for Hillary Clinton, and I was
nobody's perfect.
Devastated when Trump got elected. And the real epiphany moment for me was 2 months after the election. You know, I'd been for months trying to understand why anyone would vote for him. And the media that I trusted promised me that he wasn't going to win, that there was no chance. So they got it totally wrong, and I was trying to figure that out too. And in January of 2017, I posted on social media that, you know, I would never be able to understand how anyone could vote for a man who stood before a cheering crowd and mocked a reporter's disability. And then that's when somebody reached out to me with a video entitled Debunking That Trump Mocked the Disabled Reporter, which a compilation
that's
of footage.
How he mocks everybody.
Yeah, when they're flailing because they're caught in a lie or right. They're doing something dishonest. And he's done this.
I don't
know
what's going on.
Yeah. And he's done this numerous times. And every time it was somebody who was not disabled.
Right.
And then this one time the person happened to be disabled. So what CNN did was froze, you know, when he's going like this, and then they freeze it at this moment, and then they hold that up next to a picture of this guy who has a disability and his arm is kind of like this, and they say, look, he's mocking this person's disability. And when I saw what they had done, because I didn't know that at all, I had no idea, it blew my mind, because I was like, not only did they lie about it, and not only did they create a false narrative entirely, but they took something that I think really strikes a blow into the heart of just about anybody who's a decent human being, which is that you don't make fun of, you know, a person with a physical handicap.
Right.
You don't make fun of it. Like, and nobody does that. I mean, unless you really are a disgusting person. They know that that's disgusting. And so they intentionally made us believe that he did it.
Well, they helped create it being disgusting. That was one of the services they did, is they said, don't do this. And we've all united around, don't do that. And so that allowed them to weaponize their previous work against the president.
Right. But it's, so they intentionally took something that's so delicate and they used it, they abused it for their own gain. And then through that experience, I started researching about the media and how often does this happen? How often do they lie and manipulate? And you can think I'm an idiot. I mean, and I guess I am, but I did not know that that was something that they do. I just didn't know it. And I discovered that they do it all the time, and they do it especially to, you know, minorities. If you're black or brown or LGBT, they're constantly putting these stories out that are designed to keep us afraid, to keep us controlled, to keep us thinking the way they want us to think, believing what they want us to believe, and ultimately voting the way that they want us to vote.
So as you're coming to this realization, you had to feel a little bit like Fox Mulder going down the rabbit hole and discovering aliens exist. You're rolling in a circle of like-minded, with you at the time, people, I assume, that, you know, at least the politically active ones, you tend to sort of cluster like that. Are you having a conversation with them about what you're discovering, or are you sitting there going, holy crap, I don't know what to think, but I need to keep this to myself? How does the coming out of the cocoon happen?
That's how this whole thing started, because when I had that epiphany with the Trump mocking the disabled reporter video, I went to friends, coworkers, fellow liberals, and I was like, have you seen this, and what do you make of it? And their response was absolutely just startling.
I don't care.
No, they were angry. Me. Yeah, they were very angry at me for asking this question and being like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So what, you love Trump now? What, you're defending Trump? And I said, I'm not defending Trump. I, you know, because I hated him.
Yeah.
I hated Trump. And I was like, you know, I'm just trying to understand this. Because remember, this is the same media that's told us that there was no chance he was going to win.
Right.
They also did this too. So what the hell is going on? And people became very angry at me for asking that question. And then that, I think for a normal person, that might have caused them to kind of recoil into themselves and just be like, no, but I do not like people pushing me around. Mm. And I don't like people telling me that I need to be quiet or not ask questions. That makes me want to ask more. That makes me, I'm very rebellious that way.
You're a scab picker.
Yes. So the more that they treated me that way, the more it kind of pissed me off. And then it just caused me to read more, do more research. And that's when I discovered more and more and more the ways in which we're being lied to and manipulated. And then I was more outspoken. The more outspoken I was, the more friends I lost. And by the end of 2017, I had lost 90% of my friends.
So is it at that point you decided to make the video? Or
yes.
You just said, to hell with it, I got nothing left to lose?
Well, okay, so that got me through 2017, but you must bear in mind, at this point, I was now only walking away from the Democrats and the liberal media, and throughout 2017. It was not an overnight decision. Mm-hmm. And it was a very hard decision. I mean, I had to grieve giving up on this political party and the ideology of liberalism, which I thought sort of saved my life many times when I felt so alone as a gay man growing up in rural Nebraska. You know, I really felt like I owed an allegiance to liberalism and the Democrat Party. But I had to say, okay.
Well, you thought it was a two-way street. They had an allegiance to you. Correct. You discovered that that was not the case.
Well, it certainly isn't anymore. I mean, if it were ever true, I don't know, but it's not true anymore, because now even the liberals are turning on me and talking about, you know, toxic gay men and privileged gay men, and that, you know,
you don't know how easy you, I love that argument.
Try being a trans black lesbian, you know, and all, I'm just like, God, you know, so, so I walked away from all of those things, but I was not willing to become a Republican or consider Trump, you know, because I was like, I can't be a Democrat anymore. I can't be a liberal, but I'm sure as hell not going to become a Republican. And then that was kind of the end of 2017 when I started really listening and researching the conservative point of view, and finally being open to listening to all of these different people who I never was before, like Tucker Carlson, or
he's the worst.
I love Tucker Carlson.
Bad breath, big time.
Hell of a news outlet, though.
Yes.
But so anyway, I started kind of listening to conservatives, researching that. And then it finally, after months of that, I was like, oh, my God, I think I'm actually a conservative. And on
God, I got to come out again. This is awful.
That is exactly what it was like. That is literally exactly what it's like. I thought it was
which was scarier
cruelest
for you?
Trick. Well, now, I mean, I would say it's much scarier to be a conservative.
Right.
I mean, but that I, that was. It's different for every person. I mean, my gay experience was, I experienced a lot of kind of brutality and bullying and homophobia and stuff. It was bad. I mean, it was the 80s in Nebraska and in a farm town. But now it's, I would certainly say that it's very, it's, it, it, you're celebrated if you're an LGBT person. You are not celebrated if you're a Trump supporter. And I started speaking out about the way that I was changing my mind about Republicans and Trump in, to that early 2018, and that's when the shit really hit the fan. And, you know, a gay Trump supporter, gay Republican, blah, you know. And that is when I decided to make the video. And then I put the video out on May 26th of 2018.
What was your mindset before you hit publish? After you record this video, you make sure it's right. You make sure it's all set.
I worked
it's very everything, hard on it. Everything you want to say in this video. It went wildly viral. And it's one thing doing it. It's another thing, like, now it's time for the world. I've written a book, and it's great. You write it, and you send it off to the publisher. It's this good, and you're ready to publish it. But the night before it comes out, you're shitting your pants.
Mm-hmm. Like,
okay, now everybody gets to see it.
Yes.
That's not deeply personal. That's not risking alienating the remaining 10% of my friends. Right. That's not, you know, giving the people who've been slinging arrows at me a new refilled quiver to come at me with.
Right.
I assume you didn't know that it would go as wild as it did.
You never know for
but
sure.
But you never knew, and you knew there was a possibility, at least in your circle of existence at that moment, that it could go and permeate everybody. So you could have been upsetting the entire apple cart. When you're about to hit publish, what's going through your mind?
First of all, thank you for asking me this question. No one has ever asked me this question before.
But everybody else sucks. That's just science.
No, it's such a good question. And I love getting kind of to go back into my mind frame at that time. I was very scared. I set a trap for myself, essentially, because I took that video and I made it into like a 15 or 20 second little teaser. And I put that out about 5 days ahead of time. And I said to everybody, it was Memorial Day of that year, May 26th. I said, on Memorial Day, I'm putting out this video where I'm going to tell everybody exactly what I think, and that I'm going to launch this thing that I'm calling the Walkaway Campaign. And I was a total, you know, nobody. I had no following. I had no political contacts, no media contacts. So it was really just my friends. And no, I absolutely was thinking to myself, there's a very good chance nobody's going to watch this video. It's not going to go viral. People are going to laugh at it. It's the only people who are ever going to see it are the people who are already friends with me on Facebook or whatever. It's going to completely ruin, my relationship with these people. Not just my relationship, but they're going to be like, that was really stupid.
There are bigger ramifications possibly too. I don't know what your employment situation was at the time, but you could have made yourself unemployable to a large swath of your industry.
Well, and I was
so you were taking a big risk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't imagine there's a lot of, sympathy for Donald Trump and the hairstyling industry.
Right. Well, but the employability factor, I don't know to what degree that was in my head at that time, because what I did not think, What I didn't think is that it would eventually become like a 501c3 and that I would be traveling the country doing speaking engagements. And that's how I would
you
make my money.
You mean you're not a product of the Koch brothers and this wasn't all plotted out on a chessboard years ago?
No.
You sure?
Walkaway is not an AstroTurf
organization. Daily Kos says a different story.
Who does?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't read the Daily Kos, but they don't write legibly enough for me to read it. But okay, so you're about to hit publish. Your colon is full. Your bowels are ready to explode. Yeah. What's going on?
Right. So, well, one thing that's kind of funny is, so I have my mother, I have to talk about my mom a little bit. I am absolutely nothing like the person who gave birth to me. I mean, she is like, I've always been very outspoken, very rebellious, very stand up for your beliefs and whatever. And she, my mom, the biggest like mantra and messaging that I got as a child from my mother was never rock the boat, always blend in, don't ever do anything to draw attention
to
yourself.
Those Midwestern values. Yeah. I grew up in Michigan. I know them well.
Yeah. I mean, literally, this is a woman who is absolutely horrified of anyone ever looking or paying attention to it. Like, just don't rock the boat, always blend in, keep your head down, don't, you know. So I showed it to her before I did it. I said, look, I'm going to do this. I need you to know this is coming. And I showed it to her, and she was just like, why do you have to do this? Why? Why?
Like, go back in the closet, like, yeah, man. Come on, man. Once isn't a lifetime is
leave
enough.
It alone.
Come on, dude.
Yeah, she's like, just leave it alone. Just leave it alone. And now it's hilarious because now I'm like shaking hands with the president and right. going on Fox News. And she's
do
like,
do you know what my son is doing?
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly. So now she thinks it's so cool. But no, so that's pretty much all I had is like my mom being like, don't do this. Don't do this. And me thinking this could very easily ruin my life. But I don't know. Something inside of me felt very strong. Plus, let's be real. I mean, I'd spent like 2 or 3 weeks editing it 24 right. hours a day. And I'm like, I'm not going to throw this in the garbage can. I worked so hard on
this. Did you just ad lib a lot and cut it together? Or did you have a script? How did you?
I wrote the script. I had been kind of struggling for weeks with how I was going to communicate. I'd known I had like a burning desire inside of me to say this stuff to the world.
Right.
And I was jogging one day, and that's kind of usually when I get my ideas is when I'm kind of just jogging and in the zone. And I was jogging one day, and I literally kind of like felt like I got struck by lightning. And I heard this little – I saw this little – heard a voice in my head, and it said – once upon a time, I was a liberal. And that script just sort of downloaded itself into my brain. And I ran home and I just wrote it out as fast as I could. And then when I got done writing it out, I was like, I got to make this into a video. And so I took it piece by piece when I was shooting it, you know, just.
Right. You can see the little.
Yeah,
little
I do quite a lot of cuts.
The jump cuts. So you hit publish, you sit back. How long before it sort of blew up? Who's the first person you heard from? When you published it, and what did they say?
Like anybody or like a high
anybody A-level? You knew, anybody who mattered to you as a person at that time.
Oh.
Because those, I imagine, were the people you were most concerned with the reaction of.
Yeah, initially. What I did was I created a public page. And at that time, I was going by a pseudonym that I called myself the Unsilent Minority. Mm-hmm. And so I had this Unsilent Minority page, and I had told people – like on my personal page, I said, look, it's very political. It's very, if you want to hear it, here it is. But you know, I'm not going to put it on my personal page at first. And, so a lot of my friends came over out of, you know, curiosity. And, I kind of got both at the same time. I got a few people who were like, this is amazing. Thank you for saying this. Wow. Way to go. And then I got, several people who were friends. The one that I remember very specifically, this guy named Alex. And he's been my friend's for 20 some years. And he wrote to me and he was just like, everybody's laughing at you. He was like, dude, you have embarrassed yourself. You're never going to be able to recover from this. And so, and I didn't have, you know, it was new. I didn't
right.
have that
you
many
didn't
views.
Know.
Yeah.
You didn't know.
So I was just, I got, you know, like a pit in my stomach and I was kind of like, but now at that time, I think anything I'd ever done in my life, I don't think I'd ever gotten 1,000 views on any video I'd ever put out. You know, if I got like a couple hundred views on something, I was like, whoa. Right. And
monetize.
And, yeah.
Let's do this thing.
Right. And I think that I got 10,000 views in 48 hours or something like that. And I was over the moon. I mean, I was like, holy shit, 10,000 views. Are you kidding me?
Right.
And then I remember hitting 25,000 views within like 3 days or something. And then I just sat there obsessively refreshing.
That's good. Those are good numbers. But it's nowhere near where you ended up.
No.
What was the boom moment where everybody it took off. Do you remember when it took off? Was it because Sean Hannity talked about it? Was it because did it happen organic? Not that Sean Hannity talking about it wouldn't be organic, but was there a kick in it, or did it just kind of just keep going and forever, or was there a spike?
It went through phases. So the first, I'd say within the first like 4 or 5 days, it was mostly just growing very organically from like people on the ground. Which by the way, this has taught me so much about how everything works. Nothing that I've ever done with Walkaway has been a top-down thing. It's like literally it's had to start at the people, like the grassroots.
Right.
And then finally, like Fox News is like the last people to ever talk about anything that I do or anything that goes on. And I'm grateful to them because they've given us a lot of exposure. But it's like nothing ever breaks on Fox
News. Right, you got to earn it. You have to get your way there.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd say for like the first 4 or 5 days, it was kind of like, you know, just people across the country kind of spreading out. And then I believe Sarah Palin was the first like known person to tweet it out. And I remember she said, you've got to take a look at this. And I think she even wrote an article because I think she has a blog. And that gave us – and I was so excited because I was like, oh, my God, someone with a blue check mark and it's Sarah Palin and, you know, what? And then it started to get a little more circulation in those types of camps. Like Don Jr., I remember, started using the hashtag walkaway. James Woods started using the hashtag walkaway. This was probably in the second week. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting really – worried because people, what I'd done, you know, I'd launched the video, but I'd also created
a Facebook group. People to do their own videos.
Exactly. It was I always wanted it to be a video testimonial campaign, people telling their own stories using their own voice, you know, and it was happening. That was happening in those first weeks. People were starting to make videos and tell stories, but that was all on Facebook. So it had spread over to Twitter, which I had zero presence. I mean, I had like 40 Twitter followers. I was not a blue check mark. And all of these people who are kind of, you know, B-listers or A-listers were starting to use the hashtag. And none of them knew what it was.
Were you afraid of losing control of it?
Totally. 100%.
How'd you wrest it back?
I think that I didn't get it back until I got on Tucker Carlson, which was July 2nd. Someday when the book comes out, I'll tell you about a few people that I talked to in the meantime who said they wanted to help me, but didn't really want to help me.
Yeah, you get involved in politics today, don't get involved in politics. First of all, there are always people who want to help you, and it always ends up with them with huge piles of money and maybe some copyrights. And you're like, what did I do?
I think I was just violated. Yeah, exactly. 100%. So, I'll get into that another day. But there was a weird period of time there where everybody was using the hashtag and talking about it, but I was like, they don't understand what it is. Mm-hmm. And I had this terrible fear that it was going to trend and then evaporate. Because all of these, you know, like Don Jr. and James Woods and all of these people are using it, but it's going to just become a big trend and then it's going to just go away because right. They don't understand there's a movement happening behind it. There's so much more than just a word that we're using to trigger liberals. Like, that's not what this is about. And so I worked like hell. What I did basically was I started saying yes to every single interview that I was offered.
Big mistake.
No, it was the greatest thing I could have done. It was the greatest thing I could have done because I really, from the bottom up, sort of built the awareness around it. I started doing AM radio, just local AM radio. I started doing small podcasts. And then it just started to spread. And I started to get asked to do more and more and more. And it got to the point where I was doing 5 to 12 interviews a day, every single day, 7 days a week. Mostly, you know, podcasts and radio stations. Right. But then finally, through doing that, and then people were writing blogs about it. And they got a little bigger and a little bigger. And then finally, on July 2nd, the Tucker Carlson Show called me and said, we wanted you to come in and talk about what we're doing. And I did Tucker's show that night. And then I did Fox News like every night. I did Tucker that night, Laura Ingraham the next night. I did Charles Payne the day after that. I did Fox and Friends. I did Judge Jeanine like every single day. And then, boom, I owned Walkaway, finally.
And then how did you decide what – because you have sustained it. You are doing events across the country.
Yeah.
You have – tell people you have a big event coming up in October.
Yes, sir.
The Unsilent March.
Majority.
Yeah. Unsilent Majority.
Yeah, Unsilent Majority March on Washington.
You just announced it yesterday in Washington, D.C.
Yes, correct.
I know we're playing the game. It's actually today and it's before, whatever.
Yeah. Yes, no, it's true. So we're doing this major march on Washington on October 3rd.
How the hell does it, what's going through your mind when you're sitting here trying to figure out what to do with this thing? And you're a hairdresser from Nebraska.
Yeah.
And now you're organizing a march in Washington, D.C. Frankly, that scared the shit out of me because I'd be like, what if I threw a party and nobody comes? What if I organize this march and nobody comes and you're sitting here with this confidence? Before we get into what it is, tell me where the confidence comes from.
Well, okay, first of all, we did a march on Washington in October of 2018 before the midterm. So we did the walkaway march on Washington 5 months after walkaway started. And we had thousands of people come from across the country. They estimated 5,000 people were there. So that I look back in retrospect and I was like, where the hell did I get the confidence to do that? And that's actually kind of a funny story. I did Alex Jones's show, and that was shortly after I did that week on Fox News.
Right.
I think it was literally the next week I was on InfoWars, and we went to a commercial break, and Alex Jones said to me something about, like, hey, what do you want to do with this thing? Like, where's it going to go next or something? And I literally, on a commercial break, I said something like, I was like, you know, I'm actually thinking about doing like a march on Washington, but I'm not really sure, you know, and I was talking about it. He said, oh, you've got to do that. He's like, you got to do that. It has the potential to stop a civil war.
He's like, shirt off while he was saying it. You got to do that. Like, give me the baby oil.
He says to me, he's like, we're going to talk about that when we come back from the commercial break. And I was like, no. I was like, I literally, it's just a thought in my head.
So
like,
no. Idea. People. Alex Jones jumps on it and says, this is happening. Whether you like it or not.
He announced it when we came back from the commercial break. He was just like, he's got a big announcement. He wants to make sure you're right here. I don't know. And I was like, we're going to do the walkway march on Washington. And as I'm saying it, I'm like, fuck, now I've got
to do what do I have to do to do a march on Washington?
Yes. No, but I put together a really amazing team.
So everything is trial by fire with you.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Ready, fire, aim.
Yeah.
Let's figure out how to do this.
Absolutely. And to answer your question, you know, how did I have the confidence to do it? Well, in that situation, it was kind of like I didn't have a choice. It just sort of happened. Then I had to back it up somehow. But this is the way I view it. This is the way I look at everything. People can make fun of me if they want to, if I do something and it's not a success or if it's a failure, if no one shows up, whatever. But at the end of the day, I'm doing something. So if I throw a march on Washington or if I throw an event and nobody comes, I'm going to hold my head up high because I did something. I tried. I did an event. You know, I think the people who should be ashamed are the people who don't show up. And so people can make fun of me all they want, but I will always hold my head up high because I'm actually trying. I'm actually doing something. So
I would encourage you to use the model that the left uses. If you notice in the Fight for 15, the little Greta Turdburgler marches and everything, and the Women's March and everything, they put out the press releases ahead of time. 500 cities across the country, 10 billion cities around the world. There's going to be all these numbers of people. That's reported verbatim before it happens. They have no idea. Right. They say, well, there are 200 marches across the country. I live in a state. I've never seen one. There has to be at least four on average in my state, you know, and you don't see these things. But nobody ever goes through and does the head count. Nobody ever does the count around the state, around the states. It's just reported as fact. So you guys got to learn from them and pre-propagandize. Not that they're going to cover you anyway, but...
And you also just have to be prepared to just like suck it up and let some of that go. Because when we did the walkaway march on Washington, October 2018, I was very proud and impressed with the fact that we were able to pull thousands of people from around the country, but they still went. We did it at Freedom Plaza, was the ultimate destination. We started at John Marshall Park, and they showed up there and took pictures before we'd gotten there. So they took pictures of, you know, 75
empty
people.
Park.
Yeah. And they even took an aerial view, I think, from a building next door when there were literally like 100 people there. And they said that was the March on Washington. And, you know, and I thought this is what is so to me, it's just so telling of who they are and their nature. And I mean, these are the people that claim to be about like the movement of empowering minorities, you know, and that we're the only people that care about, you know, Black people and LGBT people. And here you've got a gay man who created this movement out of nothing, absolutely nothing at all. And not only did I make a success of it, but I did it through the support of conservatives and Republicans. I mean, these are the people that rallied behind me and supported me, and they want to make it like it's not happening. And they want to just completely erase that I was any part of. They say, oh, it's a Russian propaganda campaign, Russian bots, you know, paid actors, it's fake, and he's a grifter, and he's a useful idiot.
Some rubles did fall out of your pocket earlier, if I'm being honest. But when you... Now, you've gone from an observer to a participant to a target in the liberal media world.
Mm-hmm.
Explain the stages a little bit. What's it like to you were on CNN toyed with you a little bit, didn't they? They have you on a little bit?
No, they've never had me on.
They know?
But they've talked about Walkaway. Okay. They're the ones
who they covered it at first. I knew
they covered it.
It was broadly covered and talked about. And now they're either dismissing you or trying to stab you in the back.
Right.
One of the two.
They've never reached out to me for a comment. They've never reached out to me for
an
interview.
Too much like journalism. They don't do that over there.
Well, but they still do the stories. And, right. If you Google, and I welcome anyone watching or listening to Google CNN hashtag walkaway. And what you'll find is stories about the Russian propaganda, the Russian campaign. And no, and they never even reached out to me and said, do you have a comment on this? Or do you have? So, no, they've never interviewed me or done, give. And this is the thing, too, because a lot of people, when they talk about me on the left,
mm-hmm.
they talk about how I'm, this is an astroturfed movement.
Right.
That I'm some.
Are you getting rich off of this?
And there's
a
idiot.
Horrible thing. And it's a big plot by billionaires to try and screw over Democrats.
Exactly.
And minorities.
Yeah. And that I'm some useful idiot. And I think to myself, well, if I'm just the face and I'm just some useful idiot, wouldn't you want to have me on your show? Wouldn't that be like
expose you?
Yeah,
at a minimum,
have the stupid idiot walk away guy on your show, and you could show people how stupid people are who walk away from the Democrats. Look how dumb this guy is. Give me that chance. Give me that chance to go on CNN and show you how dumb I am. I would love that opportunity.
Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo get confused by the reflection in the mirror while that guy's staring at them. So they're not going to not going to expose anybody on anything. Now, I put out word last night on the show that you were coming on, and I solicited some questions because, believe it or not, of all the people we've had on, David Limbaugh a bunch of times, we've had Tucker on, we've had you name it, Ken Starr's been in that seat, we've had a lot of big guests in here. I've been harassed. Everybody always says, you should have so-and-so on. You should have so-and-so on. And it's like, I'm not going to get the president on. Let's just get used to that. But the one who's been, I've gotten the most emails about is you. Because I think you've struck a chord with so many people. Because I think that your journey, while much more public and more vocal, is similar to a lot of people's journeys, maybe not in the same time frame, not even necessarily over Donald Trump's presidency, but that sort of journey from what you're told in schools to what you realize as an adult. So I solicited some questions. I pulled some.
Can I ask you a question before we go in there?
Sure.
So you've gotten all these responses from people who want you to have me on the show. Mm-hmm. And here we are more than a year and a half into Walkaway. What exactly has been the holdup up until this point?
I don't like gays. No, fair
enough.
You have to be in D.C. We have to do it in studio. And Francesca, your publicist, said, hey, would you have any interest in talking to this guy? I said, yes, I would. I didn't know how to get in touch with you. I said, yes. And so I found out when you were coming in, and it just worked out. And it's spite.
I love it.
Spite. I had the walk toward movement, and you just completely screwed it up. I was coming out on the 4th of July, and you came out on Memorial Day, and it just really fizzled everything because I was hoping to get on Tucker right before the 4th, and it just screwed me over. Allison says, please tell him that his movement and the people who follow him with the videos really helped me realize that going through the uncomfortable process of coming to terms with the fact that everything you thought was true was wrong. And then she goes on to say other things about me and everything. But I imagine you get messages like this. I just wanted, because Allison was very vehement. She wrote a very long, nice email to you. I imagine you hear from people like that a lot.
All the time. And thank you, Allison. Thank you.
There you go,
yeah,
Allison.
All the time.
Steve, please ask him how the Dems can claim themselves to be the party of identity when the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, are there for everyone. It's kind of what you wrestled with. You thought that Republicans were against gay people, hated gay people because of gay marriage. There was a lot of that during the Civil Rights Movement when Barry Goldwater said, we don't need the Civil Rights Bill. The Constitution sort of takes care of this. And he was painted not as a constitutionalist. He was painted as a bigot, especially retroactively. Now, when you look back on what you thought of Republicans, were you wrong or did you just not understand? There's a difference there.
I totally understand the question. I think it would depend on exactly what issue we were talking about. And I think it would depend on the time that issue existed. There are things that I think that the Republicans have it dead wrong on, mm-hmm. and I don't understand.
Well, that shows you're a sentient human being. The only person you should agree with 100% is you.
Yeah.
And you're not president of the United States. You're not a member of Congress.
Right. But I absolutely think that the Democrats and the liberal media have done a remarkable job at falsely and erroneously framing arguments to try to attack the character or morality and intentions of Republicans. And I think a great example of that is the abortion issue. I believed that it was right and kind and compassionate and moral to be pro-abortion because I believed that men and Republicans wanted to control women and that the abortion issue was about trying to exert power and authority over women as a man, because that's how they say. They say it's, trying to control women's bodies,
my body, my choice.
Right. And so that is an example of me learning, I think, as a conservative and doing my research kind of about why conservatives feel the way that they feel, finding out that most conservatives really just believe that life begins at conception and that they want to protect a life that doesn't have the power to protect itself. And that to me is a prime example. On the other hand, I will say, and I'm sure a lot of people will get pissed, but whatever, I think a lot of conservatives could do a little growing up when it comes to the issue of human sexuality. I think they're a little over the top sometimes on their views about sexuality.
I think that's one of the few things libertarians get right. It's Michael Stipe, REM's lead singer, had a great quote. He was asked about whether he was gay or not. He said, "It's nobody's business what I do with my dick unless you're sitting in my lap."
Yeah.
And I don't care. As long as whatever you do with is old enough and willing, I couldn't care less. But don't make me pay for it. Don't make me cheer it. Don't make me involved in it at all.
Sure.
That's it.
But yes, but I'm not even actually just talking about, homosexuality or—
You're talking about the whole trans issue?
Well, there's that too. No, but at that moment when I was, okay. So I'm very open and outspoken about the fact that I'm gay. And even that, I'm not generalizing here because there are many, many conservatives now that are ready to move past this. I have an enormous amount of conservatives that come to me and hug me at the end of my speeches and say, "Thank you. My son is gay. My grandson is gay," whatever. That has nothing to do with my conservatism. And they're very grateful that there are people like me now who are just like, "Look, I'm gay and I'm a conservative and that it is what it is." But there are some still who just are like, "Why do you have to say you're gay? Why do you have to announce that? Why can't you just keep?" And I'm like,
"Keep even that to yourself."
Why is it an issue? Yeah.
Look, I don't want to look. I don't want to watch you make out with your boyfriend. I don't want anybody to watch me make out with my wife. I don't want to watch anybody make out. That's just the way it is. It's like, get a room, okay? There's a place for that. Kiss, fine. I don't care about that. The Buttigieg kiss at the end of every debate, I couldn't care less about. One of my sisters is gay. I couldn't care less. She's married. I love them both. But there is that sort of – I think that's more old school, though. You're not finding that in young people. And that's more that just whatever you do, keep it to yourself. It's the same crowd. You don't talk about money. You don't talk about how much money you make. You don't talk about the sex that you've had.
Yeah.
You do that when you're out drunk with your friends. But you don't do that in general. You certainly don't do that in polite society. I think that's probably the pushback that you're getting. It's not real pushback, though. It's more of a critique, I would think.
I guess. But, I guess it depends on
the— Because they're not booing you off the stage when you do it. When you do it.
No.
So they're,
although it actually did happen for the first time recently. This woman, I was talking, I did this speech for over 1,000 people. And I was talking about how I'm gay, because it's part of my story.
Right.
And she stood up I didn't hear it. She got kicked out. And honestly, I have to say kudos to the club I was speaking at, huge club in Florida. They banned her for life. But she stood up and she said, I can swear on this show, right?
You already have.
Yeah, I know. She stood up from the back and she said, "I don't care whose dick you suck. You're promoting homosexuality and all that." I missed all of it, but someone from my team went over to her.
So what if she did care?
It seems like you care a lot.
I got a very important dick over here. Like, well, now I take it back.
Yeah. Well,
I don't understand that mentality.
I don't
either. In the minority. Did you ever run into that in the left? And not that you were ever speaking to 1,000 people.
Probably. I mean, there was a time. I mean, it's not like, all Democrats were always like super pro-gay or cool with that. I mean, I grew up in an era where homophobia was and in a geographical location where it was pretty common. And I don't think it mattered what side of the political aisle you are. And people were just very uncomfortable with gay people back then, where I was. And now, certainly, I think that the Democrats were very keen about, like, noticing that the cultural trend was changing and jumping on that and being like, you know, we're kind of reaching this tipping point where the majority of people are okay with, you know, gay people getting married. And so they decided at that point to kind of just rush in and be like, we got this. We got this. We're going to take ownership for that. But yeah, certainly I've seen it on both sides for sure.
This is perhaps the most important question and part of your mission. This is from Star. Said, what is the best technique to use to red pill those people who are against Trump based solely on emotion and are not willing to listen to facts because emotions hold more value to them? This is sort of what I imagine you ran into when you first had this epiphany and you kind of had to do to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
How do you deprogram them? Pulling somebody out of a cult.
Yeah. And how do you make that connection with them in the first place?
You call Leah Remini because then they come in with the anti-Scientology.
I feel like I'm the Leah Remini of.
Well, you get an A&E liberalism. Show out of it.
Yeah. I would love that. Okay. So one thing that looking back on my own kind of transition experience, and you're right, I had to do it myself. And I kept thinking to myself, I wish that, because as I kind of like, took it out of my own volition to get to know Republicans better and get to know conservatives better, I discovered that they were not many of the things that I believed that they were. And I kept thinking to myself, why don't they just say this more often? Like, why don't they actually like talk about how they're not racist or talk about how they're not, you know, bigots or whatever? And so one thing that I tell people when they ask me that question or a similar question is that liberals in general assume that they have kind of a monopoly on compassion and morality, and that conservatives...
They don't assume it. They insist it.
They insist it. Yeah, and that if you're a conservative or a Trump supporter or whatever, that is, you're a morally deficient human being, that you're deplorable, that you... And they just assume that you're all of these bad things. I mean, you can't even wear a MAGA hat without people feeling like it's the white hood of the KKK and that they have to feel threatened based off of looking at that. And so what I always tell people is that I think it's an effective strategy to try to establish mutual core values at the beginning of the conversation, which is to say, like, let's say we were having a conversation about the border wall, right? Because that's a huge hot button issue that liberals think is stemming in racism and hatred of brown people. And, you know, and I think that one thing that conservatives don't do well is say things like, look, I care very much about all Americans. In fact, I care a lot about Black Americans. I care a lot about Hispanic Americans. And that is actually the reason why I have the views that I have or the beliefs that I believe, because, you know, did you know that illegal immigration disproportionately affects Hispanic Americans and Black Americans? It's the low income Black and Hispanic Americans who are suffering the most when people are coming into our border illegally. And it's a lot of these neighborhoods that have much higher crime rates than they normally would, because a lot of people who come in illegally and are, you know, have a predisposition to commit crime are entering into these neighborhoods. You know, these border wall policies keep Black Americans safer. They keep Hispanic Americans safer, and they also help their wages go up and help them get better jobs. I care about these people just as much as you do, but I believe that my policies will help these people thrive more than your policies will.
If somebody had tried to Sherpa you through the journey you went through, somebody tried to pull you along, guide you, would you have resisted, do you think? With your contrarian, don't tell me what to do sort of...
Yes.
Personality?
Yes, I would have.
So this is really only a journey you could have made on your own.
I think so. Yeah, because I actually remember somebody in my life very shortly before I had this sort of epiphany and transition coming to me. It was before the election, but not long before the election. And she came to me. She was a friend since childhood. I knew her since we were little kids. And she came to me and she said, I love you, but she was like, do me a favor. She was like, try watching Fox News for just 1 week. She's like, I just want you to get the, and I lost it. I mean, I went off on her and how dare you, you know, whatever. And I unfriended her. And I just because she asked me to watch Fox News for a week, I freaked out. And so, no, I don't think that if somebody came to me at that time, it would have depended on maybe who the person was.
So if you have somebody like Stars, somebody you want to reach out to, somebody you want to talk to, if there's resistance, don't be afraid to step back.
Well, so in a situation where it's not going well, perhaps let's say you try, say, a technique like something like I just sort of mentioned, it's not working out clearly. I think that what ultimately did it for me was the ability to come to this conclusion on my own, in my own space, and in the safety of my own sort of, you know, without having to admit to somebody that I was wrong. Mm-hmm. Because that person who reached out to me with that debunking video did it on private message on Facebook. And she said to me, she's like, look, I'm not trying to start a fight with you, but you ask this question, you know, like, how could anyone vote for a man who would do this? She's like, will you please just watch this and just tell me, and she said, and tell me what you think of it. And so I watched it, and I had to watch it 3 times because I went into denial, like an extreme state of denial. Because
looking for the trick. There has to be some sort of catch to this.
Yeah.
There has to be.
Yeah, because my brain was like telling me, my brain said, oh my God, I don't think he mocked that reporter's disability. But my heart was going, but we hate him. But we hate him. But we hate him. And so I had to like put it away after I watched it 3 times. And then I watched it again the next day. And that's when I was like, oh. Wow. Oh my God. He actually did not mock that reporter's disability. And it took me a little while. And I actually said to her, dude, this is on Facebook. I said this publicly, not privately. I said, okay, I watched the video. I'm working it out in my head. I need a little time. I said, I'll get back to you after I've had a little time to process this. But I said to her, I said, thank you for reaching out to me and answering me. Because I said no one else even answered me when I asked the question. But I took a little time to kind of process it. Now she's a good friend. And she, it's really because of her that walkaway even exists.
Did you refriend the other one?
No.
I am of the personal belief that a large percentage of the Democratic Party votes Democrat because they've always voted Democrat. Mm-hmm. Because their parents were Democrats and their grandparents were Democrats.
Yes.
It's a muscle reflex. You just go in, you hunt for the D, you hunt for the D. That's all you do. You don't think about it. I don't think they know what the party has become because most people don't pay attention to the
right.
news. That, I think, is the biggest obstacle that Republicans face, and breaking that muscle reflex. You're trying to do that. Tell people where they can find out more about the walkaway movement, where they can find about the Unsilent March, and you have events all around the country, so no matter where you are, you can get together with some like-minded people, or maybe if you're just curious, if you're bipartisan curious, you can go to a walkaway movement event and just see, just test the waters. Where
That's
can people find
point.
Out more?
That's the whole point. Yeah. So people can go to walkawaycampaign.com. If they go to walkawaycampaign.com, there's a couple of buttons I would like them to pay attention to on the website. The first is join the movement. If they click that button, it's going to redirect them to the Facebook group where it all began. I know a lot of people are over Facebook now, jumping ship. But I, honestly, for the time being, at least until we come up with a kind of a different
They've
platform.
They've got all of our personal information anyway. There's nothing left to steal.
Right. I encourage people to just be willing. There are people that I know who say that they rejoined Facebook just to be a part of Walkaway and they don't use it for anything else. And I think that even if it's only for that reason, because there are hundreds of thousands of people now in that group. We have tens of thousands of video and written testimonials. And it will give you so much renewed hope and inspire you to hear people's stories. It'll make you feel really good. So join the movement and be a part of that by going to Walkaway, hashtag Walkaway Campaign Facebook group, which you can find by clicking join the movement on walkawaycampaign.com. Obviously, there's a donate button, and I really want people to support our organization. We now exist as two entities. We're a 501c3 educational nonprofit, and then we're also now the Walkaway Campaign Super PAC. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's links to both of those if people want to make a donation to either one. Please do so. This is how we get into these minority communities, do these town halls where we're talking to the Black community, Hispanic community, Jewish, LGBT, et cetera. We're about to do an amazing women's event, which we'll be launching on February 1st. And then, of course, we have the Unsilent Majority March on Washington.
Which has a website?
Unsilentmarch.com. Unsilentmarch.com. And that's where people can register for – it's a free event, but we just want to, you know, people to register so we know who's coming. They can get discounted hotel rooms there for people who are coming. We will be arranging transportation options as the months go on. We'll work with busing companies to get you discounted bus fare, et cetera, if you want to come from across the country. And also I just want to let people know too that we're in college campuses doing what we call the
they let you on college campuses?
It's not always easy. And if people look at what happened to us at Chico State University in California last semester, that was a hell of a ride. But that's the Walkaway Thought Revolution college campus tour that we're doing. So we're going to build that out even more in this coming year. We did 7 last semester. We're going to do a lot more this year. And we have an educational video series called The Hard Truth. So if people go on YouTube, please look up The Hard Truth. And that's I really love the first episode, not just because I'm in it, but I'm
how'd you get that gig?
I know. I knew a guy. So each episode is about 5 minutes long, a different speaker speaking on a different topic. But the first episode that I did is about liberal media bias. And it's a very special episode to me because it's the first episode. But also I get into that debunking the Trump mocked the disabled reporter thing. So check it out. It's kind of cool. And it's a good way to red pill people with these episodes.
Last question for you.
Yes, sir.
When you get the call that the president wants to meet you, do you believe it's the White House calling, first of all? How does that come about?
Well, okay, so I did the I was Mark Levin's guest on Life, Liberty, and Levin for the full hour on March of last year. And Lara Trump saw that episode. She reached out to me. I'd never spoken to her before. And she was like, she told me that she watched, it's an hour long episode.
Right.
And she told me, she said, I was sitting there brushing my teeth in my apartment. And she said, I saw you. And she said, I was so enamored that she said, I spent the entire hour with my toothbrush in my mouth standing. She said, I was standing in front of my television screen just watching you for an hour.
Drooling all over wildly expensive carpeting.
Yes. So Lara Trump reached out to me after watching it. And I went to meet with her in Trump Tower. And at that point, we kind of established a relationship with one another. And it was through her that I actually spoke at the Trump rally in Cincinnati. So I was already kind of at a point where there was a little bit of establishment of contact. So, right. Yeah, I don't think it's a nasty trick anymore.
Still, I've met Trump a couple of times before he was president, during the campaign and at other events. Not since. It's different when they're president.
Yes.
And it's very bizarre. And I look, Brandon Strock with an A at the end that is not pronounced, silent A. Drop the A. Come on.
I know. Or just go by Straka.
Yeah. Well, no. Don't give in to those bastards who mispronounce things. Thank you for coming in. Finally, after a year and a half of trying to get you here, I wish you the best of luck. Congratulations on all the success, continued success. And thank you.
Thanks for having me today. It's a great talk.
That is all the time we have for today. Don't forget to click share, like, and whatever else crap that pops up over my face. Thank you for listening. Telling a friend. Be back here on Monday. Have a great weekend. See you then.